Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Ugandan voters go to the ballot to pick their next leader. We talk to the chairman of the Electoral Commission.
Let the voters do their share, and I've assured the country. I am confident we can have, and we shall have, a free and fair election.
The UN Children's Agency is appealing for funds to help 1 million children across Eastern and Southern Africa.
We know the situation will get worse, and we really do need the donor communities to come in and support the programs that are already running in many countries and to help start the programs that haven't already started.
And Foster Touadera is leading Anise Dologele in the race to become president of the Central African Republic. Good morning and welcome to Africa Link, live from DW Studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
Top story.
Uganda decides. It's polling day in the East African nation where 15 million people have registered to vote in parliamentary and presidential elections. President Yoweri Museveni, who has been in power for 3 decades, is expected to win. But his main challenger, key opposition candidate Kizza Besigye, has said he is confident of ousting Museveni. Our DW correspondent Alex Chita is standing by at one of the polling stations in the capital, Kampala.
I'm at Chiswa Health Center polling station, and I can see that there are 3 polling stations at this place. Each polling station has a long line of people waiting to vote. Some of them have already voted and left, but I have one of the early voters here. So what's your name?
I'm Gerard Barebe.
Mr. Gerard Barebe, you've already voted, but what can you say about the organization of the voting system here?
I think the organization is very, very poor. Voting was supposed to start at 7 a.m. I got here at 6:45. I found here around 30 other voters who are waiting for the system to begin. But the polling agents did not seem to know even what was going on. The materials were not enough. We had to wait until around 8:45. That's when the voting began. But still, even when it started, there are 2 systems here. One is that they are using the biometric system, and then they're also using the voters register. Like for my case, my fingerprint could not be detected by the biometric system machine, but my name was in the voters register. So
they allowed you to vote?
Yes, at the end they allowed me to vote, but I don't think all the people are probably going to vote. I think most of the people are so frustrated with the system because they have been here 6:45. Some of them came earlier than that. But you can see that the lines are very long and still people are complaining that the system is very, very slow.
Yeah. So, Crispin, that's one of the voters. One of the polling stations here at Kiswa Health Center doesn't have all the materials because you have to vote. They give you one ballot paper, you vote, then you go back and pick another one. And considering looking at the lines, this is going to take a long time for all the people to finish voting.
And what can you tell us about the presence of security personnel?
Well, at each polling station, there is a policeman waiting and helping to organize the people who are coming to vote. But throughout the city, the streets are being patrolled by the police, and in some areas, the army has been positioned to keep the city safe.
You've mentioned, as well as the voter there, a number of problems that have already been experienced. But what do the observers say? Are they also noting down these issues?
Yes, I can see that there are some observers already around here. They were here at 6:50, 10 minutes to the voting time, the time when the voting was supposed to start at 7 a.m. I see observers from the African Union, the American Embassy, the Uganda Human Rights Commission, and also the European Union. They have their notebooks and taking notes and also interacting with some of the people who have finished voting, and I think they're collecting information, yes.
DW correspondent Alex Jita in Kampala. Prior to the voting day, human rights and civic society organizations had voiced concerns over whether the Ugandan election will be free and fair. At least one person was killed on Monday as police clashed with opposition supporters. And one Ugandan radio host was arrested mid-broadcast last Saturday. So what are the chances that this election will end peacefully? Mark Caldwell has been finding out from Badru Kigundu, chairman of the Uganda Electoral Commission.
No, it has been a very peaceful campaign. That is a one-off shot. But I don't think it will mar the peace that we're yearning for. We are ready for a peaceful election.
Dr. Besigye has said, and I quote, the election has no chance of being free and fair. Now, I understand you're responsible for the conduct of this election. What's your reaction to those remarks by a key opposition figure?
That is his perception, but he is equally responsible for the delivery of a free and fair election. I don't vote. He has voters. Let the voters do their share, and I've assured the country. Free and fair election is delivery is a multi-stakeholder responsibility. And is equally responsible, just like voters, just like media, just like observers, just like security, and so forth. I can't mention all the stakeholders, but each one has a share. And me, as the manager, I am confident we can have, and we shall have, a free and fair election. Stakeholders do their rightful share.
How well prepared is your country for this election? Will everybody who is eligible to vote be able to vote?
The country is very peaceful. All those who are eligible to vote and who took trouble to register for voting will actually vote.
What can you tell us about the international and local observers who will be monitoring this election?
You know, there are a good number of them already in the country, and I am responsible for accrediting them. I have already accredited them, and I've accredited, there are more than 2,000 observers, both local and international.
Were there any observers who weren't accredited?
I don't recall any, unless somebody did not apply in time.
Badru Kigundu, chairman of the Uganda Electoral Commission.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
And the blame game begins. Presidential runoff rivals in the Central African Republic have accused each other of fraud as results trickle in. The election held last Sunday pitted Anise Dologele against Foster Touadera. Partial results show Touadera is not only in the lead, he's also extending that lead. Mark Caldwell has been speaking to Nick Long, who is in the capital Bangui, to find out how people have been reacting to the results.
It's been a very calm, tranquil reaction. I've just spoken to a missionary who's been here for many years who said that she's never known an election which passed off so peacefully. She was speaking to the Archbishop, who agreed. She says that people have not got excited, and I haven't seen excited people in the streets, but people going about their normal business. And I've spoken to people who've said that they think the result is going Touadera's way. Some of those who support Dologele say, well, we're still keeping up our hopes. We haven't had the results from the great majority of the country. But nevertheless, as you say, the way that Touadera has extended his lead now that they're starting to announce results from outside Bangui, and already in Bangui he had a big lead on Dologele, and it's a bigger lead in the rural areas so far, suggests that Touadera is going to win an overwhelming victory.
Touadera was considered an outsider in the first round, surprised many by making it to the runoff. Why is he so popular?
Well, first of all, he seems to have been a compromise choice among many of the defeated presidential candidates who are now backing him. He was a vice president of the former ruling party called the Kwana Kwa, and originally, last year, Dologele managed to forge an alliance with the former president, François Bozize, who was overthrown in 2013, who was the leader, founder of the Kwana Kwa. And it seemed that Bozize had, in a sense, given his blessing to Dologele, and that seemed to mean that the powers that be in this country, the remnants of the administration that are out there in the different prefectures, would support Dologele, and that opinion leaders and state agents and generally intellectuals would tell people Dologele is the person to vote for. But during the campaigning, it seemed that Touadera, in fact, won the argument within the Kwana Kwa, within the former ruling party, and it seemed that most of the civil servants, the opinion formers, had swung behind him, or preferred him at least. And now that the other candidates, who each had their different regional support, their different ethnic blocs supporting them, have dropped out of the race and are backing Touadera, that means that he's got the mass of opinion leaders on his side. Also, it's true that whilst he was Prime Minister for 5 years, civil servant salaries were paid. Dolly Gelly has pointed out that that was only 24,000 people whose salaries were paid, and there's the rest of the country to think about as well. Nonetheless, in a country where the government has never had much to show in terms of good governance, the fact that they did manage to pay those civil servants' salaries for 5 years is a rare accomplishment and has tended to make people think that Touadera would make the better president.
Nick Long in the Central African Republic. And we'll be keeping an eye on those results and bring them to you once they are announced. Now, more than 1 million children in several countries across southern and eastern Africa are facing nutrition-related ailments. This is due to the long drought attributed to the El Niño weather pattern. As Tuzo Kumalo reports from Johannesburg, the UN Children's Agency is now appealing for funds so it can help these vulnerable children.
According to UNICEF, over 1 million children in southern and eastern Africa are in need of treatment for severe acute malnutrition. Lesotho, Malawi and Zimbabwe are some of the worst affected. UNICEF Regional Emergency Advisor Megan Gilgan says thousands of children in Zimbabwe are amongst the country's estimated 2.8 million people facing food and nutrition insecurity.
So you have ongoing programs that are looking at cash to needy families, scaling up access to water and to treating malnutrition. So in Zimbabwe, we see the situation significantly deteriorating and we'll need quite a lot of support to make sure that vulnerable people have access to the key services.
Malawi is facing the worst food crisis in 9 years, with more than 15% of the population, 2.8 million people, at risk of hunger. Mahimbo Mdo, UNICEF representative in Malawi, says cases of severe acute malnutrition amongst children are on the rise compared to 2015.
The situation in terms of children's nutrition at the moment is not that good. We're having a 100% increase both in nutritional rehabilitation units. These are places where children are treated for malnutrition. The numbers are about 4,500 or a little bit above in terms of severe acute malnourishment in Malawi at the moment.
In Ethiopia, up to 6 million children require food assistance, while in Somalia, 60,000 children are already severely malnourished. The impact has been huge, and many families and children have been forced to resort to desperate measures like transactional sex and child labor in order to survive. UNICEF's Gilgan says they urgently need funds to assist these children with necessities like milk, peanuts, provision of clean water, medication, sanitation, education, and food.
We know the situation will get worse, so I think we have the evidence of the impact. Governments are taking the situation seriously, and we really do need the donor communities to come in and support the programs that are already running in many countries and to help start the programs that haven't already started.
Gilgan says if action has to be taken, it should be taken now before it is too late.
DW correspondent Tuzo Kumalo reporting in Johannesburg. Time to hear again the final installment of our Crime Fighters radio drama.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello, glad you could join us for the finale of Crime Fighters on the Trail of the Poachers. This episode is called The Truth at Last. It was a shocking turn of events when Dr. Susan Galana, the respected and revered wildlife conservationist, was identified as the notorious poacher Mr. G. Why did she lead this double life? We know now that Betty Karangi was the one blackmailing Dr. Susan, aka Mr. G, but we still haven't found out who killed Betty's lover, Patrick. Let's listen in as the detectives Carl and Alan interrogate the poachers who worked for Mr. G.
Guys, I know you think you're helping yourselves by not speaking, but believe me, you aren't.
Yeah, that's what you say.
Well, if you don't say anything, we'll just rely on the evidence, and that's very much against you. Remember, we took your fingerprints last time. Well, Emmanuel, your prints match the ones on the murder weapon that killed Patrick Igunza. So we know for sure that you did it.
If you cooperate, Emmanuel, it might get you a reduced sentence. And what about you, John? Do you want to end up in prison for life because of something Emmanuel did? Tell me what happened.
Emmanuel wanted to collect a video from the boss. But this man, Patrick, he wouldn't give it to us. Emmanuel threatened him and he defended himself. And then it all just happened somehow. Suddenly, the guy was dead.
John, you idiot! Who's your boss?
I can't tell you. These people are very powerful. They are dangerous.
All right then, let me take a guess. Your boss is Mr. G. And Mr. G is Dr. Susan Galana. We've watched the video of her killing the elephant. You and Emmanuel are there with her.
Listen, John. Dr. Susan's here in custody. We arrested her earlier today. Nobody can threaten you if you talk to us. We'll protect you.
No, that's a lie.
Yes, it's her. She's our boss.
Would you be willing to say that in court?
If I do, will the judge really reduce my sentence?
Very probably.
All right, then. I'll do it.
Oh, John, you're such an idiot baboon. You...
Finally, the truth at last. Armed with these facts and a potential witness, Alan and Carl crossed to the other interrogation room for another session with Mr. G.
I hope you've had time to think things through, Dr. Susan.
I told you. I'm not saying a word until I've spoken to my lawyer.
Keeping your mouth shut won't help you now. Your henchmen, the poachers, have confessed. They say you hired them to poach for you, and you told them to kill Patrick.
What? Those idiots!
You know what this means, Doctor? It means you're not just up for poaching. You'll also be charged with conspiracy to commit murder.
You have no evidence.
Oh, but we do. One of your henchmen has kindly agreed to testify for us. You're going to prison for a very long time, Mr. G.
Damn it.
I don't get it. Why did you do it? You had everything going for you. A good, decent life. I really admired you. Everybody admired you so much. All this time... I just don't understand.
Yeah, all this time. Can you imagine what it's like to wake up every day chasing a mirage? Every single day, year after year, fighting for a cause that no one seems to appreciate?
Yes, I can. My job is not much different.
Frustrating, isn't it? You see the ones on the other side of the fence who are causing the destruction. You see how they profit and enrich themselves. Then one day you wake up and think, what the hell? If I can't beat them, I may as well join them.
But you always seemed so convincing, fighting for wildlife conservation. How could you cast aside all your scruples and start killing these animals?
I tried for years to save them, but I failed again and again. In the end, the temptation of money was stronger.
But you kept up the work as a wildlife conservationist, because it was a perfect cover?
Right.
Well, it's all over now. You are going to prison for a very long time.
Oh my God.
There's an African saying, regret is a grandchild. It means that one day later, you will pay for your misdeeds. And although you regret them then, it will be too late. That's certainly true for Dr. Susan, and also for the poachers and the blackmailer, Betty.
Morning, Carl. You're early today. That's not like you.
Morning. A cold morning, isn't it?
Yeah. But imagine how cold it must be in those cells.
Right. Quite a change for someone like Dr. Susan. She's used to a much more comfortable life. Now she's going to prison for, what, a combined term? 40 years to life.
Yeah. Dr. Susan might spend the rest of her days in jail... thinking about all the animals she killed and about poor Patrick. He only died because she thought he was the one threatening to expose her double life. I have a court session in 1 hour. I'm testifying against Betty, the blackmailer. The prosecutor tells me Betty faces up to 20 years in prison.
20? Isn't that a bit stiff just for blackmail?
Not at all. Extortion is a serious crime. It's even worse when it puts someone's life in danger. And in her case, it was indirectly the cause of Patrick's death. Hence the harsh penalty.
Gosh, it's going to be a busy week for us, huh? We've got another court session tomorrow against the poachers.
Those two are in big trouble. Especially the one who killed Patrick. Poaching and a murder charge. I reckon he'll get life imprisonment.
And the other poacher, John, is facing a maximum of 15 years just for poaching. He did cooperate with us, though, and he's agreed to testify, so we may make a deal for 10.
Good work, man.
Yeah.
The police officers are content, and so is Lucy. Remember her, Patrick's widow? To begin with, she was a prime suspect, but now she's been cleared of all charges. Her sister-in-law, Mona, has been helping her deal with her grief. What are the two young ladies up to now?
I'm very glad you came in such large numbers today. Before I go on, let me introduce you to someone who's like a sister to me. A very strong woman. My sister-in-law, Lucy Igunza. Yeah.
Thank you, Mona. Thank you.
We are gathered today to remember our dear friend Patrick, my brother and Lucy's husband, who was murdered in such terrible circumstances.
Mona and I decided that we wanted to celebrate his life in a special way. You may already know that Patrick was a veterinarian. He loved animals and he wanted to help them. So today we are officially launching the Bovu Wildlife Conservation Initiative.
This organization will aim to work with both communities and the government to educate the public on the importance of wildlife, resolve human-wildlife conflicts, and help identify poaching hotspots.
Never again shall traitors like Dr. Susan take over and misuse wildlife conservation for their own personal gain.
Never. Never.
We will do better together as one.
So please, join me today in launching our new project, the Bovu Wildlife Conservation Initiative, in memory of Patrick Igunza.
And that concludes On the Trail of the Poachers, a crime story brought to you by DW. The author of this series was James Mohando, with a special contribution by South African crime writer Andrew Brown. Remember, if you missed any of the episodes, you can always go to our website, dw.com/crimefighters, where you can catch up on this series and many more. Also, do join in the discussion on our Facebook page. Thanks for keeping us company, and until next time, goodbye.
As we close the file on the poachers, make a date with Africa Link on Monday as we begin a new series of crime fighters. It is called Land of Chongwe. Before we go, a reminder of our main stories. Voting is underway in Uganda amid concerns over election-related violence. Partial results in the Central African Republic put François Touadéra ahead of his rival Anise Dologele. And UNICEF is appealing for more than 140 million euros to help 1 million children affected by drought in southern and eastern Africa. We do like to hear from you about the stories we've covered in this edition of Africa Link. Send us an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, an SMS to country code 49160957595110. The number again, 49160957595110, or in a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. For more news on the continent, visit dw.com/Africa. I'm Crispin Mwakideu. Good day. Take care.